Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Translation and purport to verse 46, chapter The Forest of Enjoyment. Devotees interested in hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, regularly discuss the pure characteristics of Bharata Maharaj and praise his activities. If one submissively hears and chants about the all-auspicious Maharaj Bharata, one's lifespan and material opulences certainly increase. One can become very famous and easily attain promotion to the heavenly planets, or attain liberation by merging into the existence of the Lord. Whatever one desires can be attained simply by hearing, chanting, and glorifying the activities of Maharaj Bharata. In this way, one can fulfill all his material and spiritual desires. One does not have to ask anyone else for these things. For simply studying the life of Maharaj Bharata, one can attain all desirable things. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The forest of material existence is summarized in this 14th chapter. The word bhavatavi refers to the path of material existence. The merchant is a living entity who comes to the forest of material existence and tries to make money for sense gratification. The six plunderers are the senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, and mind. The bad leader is diverted intelligence. Intelligence is meant for Krishna consciousness, but due to material existence, we divert all our intelligence to achieve material facilities. Everything belongs to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But due to our perverted mind and senses, we plunder the property of the Lord and engage in satisfying our senses. The jackals and tigers in the forest are our family members, and the herbs and creepers are our material desires. The mountain cave is our happy home, and the mosquitoes and serpents are our enemies. The rats, beasts, and vultures are different types of thieves who take away our possessions. And the Gandharva Pura is a phantasmagoria of the body and home. The will of the wisp is our attraction for gold and its color. And material residence and wealth are the ingredients for our material enjoyment. The whirlwind is our attraction for our wife, and the dust storm is our binding passion experienced during sex. The demigods control the different directions, and the cricket is the harsh word spoken by our enemy during our absence. The owl is the person who directly insults us, and the impious trees are impious men. The waterless river represents atheists who give us trouble in this world and the next. The meat-eating demons are the government officials. And the prickling thorns are the impediments of material life. The little taste experienced in sex is our desire to enjoy another's wife. And the flies are the guardians of women, like the husband, father-in-law, mother-in-law, and so forth. The creeper itself is women in general. The lion is the wheel of time. And the herons, crows, and vultures are so-called demigods, pseudo-swamis, yogis, and incarnations. All of these are too insignificant to give one relief. The swans are the perfect brahmanas, and the monkeys are the extravagant shudras engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The trees of the monkeys are our households, and the elephant is ultimate death. Thus, all the constituents of material existence are described in this chapter.
The verse itself, they're glorifying a devotee that we've been studying for many weeks, maybe months, Maharaj Bharata. And the verse is explaining the power of glorifying a devotee. How powerful it is, such a practice. We hear and chant about Krishna, Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam. Prahlad Maharaj says we should spend our time hearing and chanting and remembering Vishnu. But in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is telling us that we should spend our time hearing and chanting about the pure devotees of the Lord. Shravanam Kirtanam Maharaj Bharatam. Or Maharaj Bharata. We should hear and chant about Maharaj Bharata. Or devotees like him. Of course, there are three Bharatas in the history of India. There is the Maharaj Bharata, then there's the son of the brother of Ram, Bharata. But this Bharatvarsha, this entire land that we're living in, Bharata Bhumi, the land of Bharata, Punya Bhumi, is named after this Maharaj Bharata. This great Maharaj Bharata, who was the emperor of the entire country, but the age of 24 years old, just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left everything. He left Vishnu, Priya Devi, the goddess of fortune, and he went out walking bare feet all over India to preach the glories of Krishna and his devotees, because he was preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And naturally, Srimad Bhagavatam is the Bhagavats and the Bhagavan. It's a glorification of devotees like Maharaj Bharata, and it's a glorification of Krishna himself in 10th canto and throughout his various incarnations leading up to Shyamasundara Krishna in Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya, he gave up everything to do this at 24. And at 24 years old, Maharaj Bharata, he gave up everything also. But he was not coming from the Brahma Varna, he was coming from Kshatriya Varna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the son of Jagannath Mishra. His name was Vishwambhar Mishra. Mishra is a Brahmin, that is his caste or his varna. So he set the ideal example, Brahmana taking sannyas and preaching all over India. So Bharata Maharaj, at an extraordinarily young age of 24, being surrounded by incredible opulence, palace, hundreds of queens, and control over all of India and all of Burma and all of this whole area. Afghanistan was all part of the empire of Bharata Maharaj, his whole land. He walked out on everything to attain God realization. He just walked out on the whole thing. And this country is named after that person. It's not named after the persons that are mentioned in the purport. Prabhupada mentions the politicians here. He says that the He said, in other words, this purport, Prabhupada is summarizing the various Sanskrit shlokas of these chapters. And in these chapters, Shukadeva is using analogies. He's comparing the different animals and beasts and creatures in nature to different aspects of a man and woman's life. And that Prabhupada summarized the entire chapter in this one purport. This animal represents this. So he says that he's speaking of the government officials, says the meat-eating demons are the government officials. So government official means the king, the prime minister, the president. So they're quite opposite of Maharaj Bharata. You don't see that India is named after these persons. His name is Bharata Bhumi, it's not Gandhi Bhumi. Although many people would like that, and let this country be renamed Gandhi Bhumi, or Swami Narayan Bhumi, or this one or that one. But all these people, they're mentioned. So, this country is named after, as the verse says, Rajarishi. He's a Rajarishi. He's a king, but he's a great saint. He's a great devotee of the Lord. So, how do we spend our time? Because we're giving a nice instruction here, Shukadeva Shiksha. He's giving us nice instruction. He's asking, my dear listener of Srimad Bhagavatam, my dear hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that person who is on the spiritual path, following the footsteps of such great devotees as Maharaj Bharata, Mahajana Yena Katasapanta, he's asking a question here. He's saying, what are you doing in your free time? Are you spending your time glorifying the pure devotees of the Lord? Or glorifying Krishna? Maybe Krishna is far from our reach, just like Madhavendra Puri or Bilwamangala Thakur. Lomangla Thakur was doing bhajan for 700 years in Vrindavan. This is told, Srila Prabhupada mentioned. On the banks of Brahmakund and at Govardhan and Govindakund, he was wandering here and there. And of course, you know, Bilvamangala Thakur was blind. By his own volition, he had removed his eyes because they were causing him attraction to the glittering objects of the material world. So he plucked out his eyes and wandered as a blind beggar, bhikshu, begging for the mercy of Radha and Krishna and the dust of Vrindavan. But what would happen is he would sit and do his bhajan every day, and Gopal, every day Krishna, Govinda Gopal, he would come and bring him some milk. He would bring him some milk and put it in his hand. And he was singing such nice songs and writing such wonderful Shastra, Krishna Karnamrita, and such realizations and visions he was having directly within his heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his eternal consort, Srimati Radharani. So one day, this boy was bringing him this milk, which he couldn't see, but he was feeling very much happy in the association of this boy. His heart was overwhelmed with joy. And he was starting to get an inkling of an idea that this person that I'm meditating on, that I'm seeing within Spurti or within my heart, is actually the same boy that's coming every day to bring the milk to me, to relieve my hunger and give me strength for my bhajan. And then he said, "I know who you are." He said, "I know who you are. You're Gopal. You can't say you're... When I asked you your identity when you first came, you said you were just a Brijvasi. When I said, who are you? He said, I'm just a Brijvasi boy. My father, he has so many cows. And we go behind the cows every day. And we play in the Jamuna and sometimes in the caves in Govardhan. I'm just a Brijvasi boy. There's so many. But I saw you're old man, you're blind, and you're a difficult position. I thought, let me bring this old man some milk. Because my father, he trained me like this. We should serve our elders and like that." So he says, "Now you told me this was your identity, but I know who you are. You're the Lord of my heart. You're my Prananath. You're my Govinda Gopal. You're my Shyam. You're my everything." And then he reached out his hands to catch him. He said, "I'm going to catch you in my loving embrace." And then Gopal jumped. Krishna jumped just beyond his reach. He said, "You'll not catch me." And then he ran away laughing. Gopal ran away laughing. And that laughter, if we could only hear that laughter in our ears, what ecstasy we would feel if we could just hear the laughter of Krishna as he runs from the hands of Bilvamangala Thakur on the banks of Govindakund. Such ecstasy we would feel. Anyway, maybe 1,000 lifetimes from now, we can have this experience. So then, Bilvamangala, he said, "You can run away from my hands, but you can never leave my heart. You can run out of, you can escape my grip and my loving embrace, but you'll never leave the core of my heart. I have tightly wrapped you there with the bonds of love and affection." So this is the example of devotees who are absorbed in glorifying Krishna in such a way that they, even if Krishna tries to lead them, they can't leave Krishna. So this Shukadeva Goswami is asking us a question: do we spend our time like this? Do we spend our time hearing and chanting about Krishna, or at least hearing and chanting about the pure devotees? So someone might say, "Well, Maharaj Bharati, he lived thousands of years ago, and such great souls are beyond our reach, and we've never seen them or met them. But within our reach is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is always within our reach, and we can simply ask ourselves, how much do we glorify Srila Prabhupada? How much do we actually sit together and glorify the characteristics and the qualities, as is mentioned here, the guna and the karma, the activities and qualities of Srila Prabhupada? Quite to the contrary, we find, if we were to reply to Shukadeva Goswami when he says, "How are you spending your time like this?" Because he says that if you do like this, if you spend your time hearing and chanting about pure devotees, like Maharaj Bharata, what will happen? You'll get everything. Whatever you want or need. All material needs, all spiritual needs. What do we need? We need love of Krishna. This is what we need. Everyone needs, every man, every woman needs love for Krishna. This is the pressing need, the urgent need for the humanity. Everything else is in abundance, overflowing. Some countries are overflowing with ghee and butter and milk. So much overflowing, they store it in caves. In America, there's 300 tons of ghee sitting in caves, waiting for who knows what. So some countries have abundance. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said there's an abundance of everything in the world. There's plenty of everything, but there's a shortage of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness begins how? How do you begin with Krishna consciousness? With devotee consciousness. What type of devotee? This type of devotee. Shuddha Bhakata Charana Renu Bhajana Anukula. Such persons, if you glorify Shuddha Bhaktas, pure devotees, this is favorable. This is most favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Shukadeva Goswami says in this verse that you can get everything, not only advancement in Krishna consciousness, but if you want some material thing, just like he says the same point in second canto, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. He says, what's the verse? Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Akama Sarva Kamava, Moksha Kamala Dharati, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. He says that Akama Sarva Kamava, he says, whether you have no desires, Akama, or you're Sarva Kama, you're full of desires, or you want Moksha Karma, you want liberation, as is mentioned here in the verse, the Karmis want Swarga, we read the word Swarga, that's the goal of the Karmis, and the Jnanis want to merge. So whatever your desire is, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. You should practice Bhakti Yoga. Tivrena. Tivrena means like a lightning bolt, like a ray of the sun, like a laser beam. Very concentrated devotion, very intense bhajan. And what will happen? Yejate, everything you want will come from that. And again he's repeating here. Here he's emphasizing the glories of the pure devotee, Maharaj Bharat. And we must take an instruction from this. Yes, let me take advantage of this easy way of spiritual advancement, to glorify the devotees. Because we see our nature is to speak of the guna and karma. We always speak about the guna and karma of other people. The qualities, the characteristics, that's the guna. And the karma means the activities, the good, sometimes. But mostly the bad, the bad karma, the bad activities dwell in our mind more and come out from our tongue more often than the good qualities and good activities. But this is a waste of time. This is simply a waste of time. Our life is very short. We can die at any moment. Could you imagine what a great tragedy it would be if the last moment of our life was spent blaspheming a devotee? Would you imagine what a great loss it would be to our spiritual life if the last words that came out of our mouth were, well, so-and-so is a this and that. That's what I think about so-and-so. And then all of a sudden, some gunda comes by the front of the temple and shoots everyone down and you die. With that words coming out of your mouth. What is your destiny? Unknown. You'll be a Vaishnava Parad. You'll have to take many births to rectify such a thing. So our life is very short. We think we're very... This is the verse, even in this purport, explains how our time is going away. Different animals are taking away our time. The jackals, the tigers. Very frightening purport if you hear all these different enemies that are lurking about. But actually, Krishna consciousness itself is a very friendly practice. It's a very favorable activity. We simply have to practice. So we get so much opportunity, especially living in society. Because society means many men and women together for a particular purpose. In material society, they're all together for one purpose, sense gratification. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the materialist, and he talks about intelligence here in a very nice way, he says the materialist, he uses all his intelligence for gaining material enjoyment. That's all. And they do it very well. They're very, very good at it, getting material enjoyment, because they apply themselves day and night. So our intelligence should be used in a similar way, but not for material enjoyment, but how to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Intelligence is actually a power. It's a shakti. Shakti means power or force. Just like we have brute force or physical force, which is the force of the body, you can push another body. A big body can push a smaller body and make him move. So that is a certain force, a physical force of the muscles of the body itself. But there's a greater force, and that is the mind. Mind over matter. You see these great, not so-called great, but some examples of people that can influence the shape of material objects by the power of their mind. There's one famous person years ago. He would take different metal objects, and by the power of his mind, he could bend them.
Because he could reorient the molecules somehow in the spoon. He could bend the spoon this way, that way. Of course, that's nothing. We're not very impressed with that. Because when Krishna plays his flute on the banks of the Jamuna, what happens? All the immovable things, they start melting and rolling. And the things that ordinarily roll, they stop moving. Like the Jamuna is moving so nicely, it starts moving. And to explain, Krishna's Kaviraj says that the birds, because you know in Vrindavan, when Krishna was here, of course Krishna is always here, but they had very nice facilities for serving all the different animals and people. There were nice bathing ghats, and there were nice places for the cows to drink water everywhere. The cows weren't begging here and there, or opening the taps. In Loy Bazaar you'll see the cows, they can open the water tap with their tongue. They become this expert, because it's so hard to get water, you have to learn how to do it yourself. But in his age, in Krishna's time, there were so many nice facilities. So for the birds, there was also what they call bird bath, or a basin, where the birds would come and drink some water to quench their thirst. Not the Chattiki birds. The Chattiki birds are different. They only drink rain from the clouds. But the ordinary birds would come over there, like the shooks and saris and parrots, they would come. So what happens when Krishna would play his flute, everything that was liquid would become solid. Or it would start to go reverse. So when the Jamuna was going this way, ordinarily flowing towards Delhi, when Krishna would play his flute, Jamunaji would go back towards the Himalayas, backwards direction. So the water inside the basin where the birds were drinking, when Krishna would play his flute, it would become solid. And the coward boys would get a great laugh because the birds were there drinking the water and they had their beaks inside the water. And then when Krishna played his flute, the liquid turned solid, the water turned into stone, and the birds were caught. And the boys would all point and laugh. Look at that. The birds have their beaks are caught in the frozen water. And then the next note of Krishna's flute, the water would again become fluid, because Krishna would never cause any distress to any of his eternal associates. So just for play, for fun, and the birds also enjoyed it, taking part in Krishna's pastime. So this is the situation with Krishna and the spiritual world. So our intelligence should be implied in such a way that we can always hear and chant about Krishna, his glories and the glories of the devotees. So of course, I'm not here making campaign for centennial, everyone's heard it over and again. But we should make a campaign to glorify the pure devotees. We see that throughout our history of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there are many devotees who have written books about the lives of devotees. Gaura Charita, the characteristics and lives of the Gaura Parishads, the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So these books that describe the life and teachings of the great devotees, just like our godbrother Satyaraj made a nice book on Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das, Six Goswamis, other books are there. Satsarup Maharaj made the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. So they're very wonderful and purifying books. As we read these books, we see that our heart becomes very quickly pure. Because the mercy of the Lord resides within the heart of the devotee. So if we want that mercy, we approach the devotee to receive it. So how do we approach the devotee? We hear and chant about his glories, we read about his life and teachings. And this is the way to spend our time. Not to spend our time however other ways we do. So I'll end there if there's any questions or comments. It says that we offer pranams to the devotees, to the Vaishnavas, and we say, Kalpataru. Kalpataru means the desire tree. And the question is, what does it mean that the devotee is a Kalpataru? Is that what you mean? Is that the question? That's the question. What is the meaning when we say Vancha Kalpataru? What is the meaning that a devotee is a desire tree? Because what is a devotee, first of all? A devotee is someone who spends his time hearing and chanting about the glories of Krishna, Radha and Krishna. And anyone he meets, wherever he goes, Yari Deke Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Gyana Guru Hare Taridesh, whomever he meets, wherever he goes, he tells him about Krishna. And Vrindavan, and the goal of life, and chanting Hare Krishna. And what does that do? That fulfills the desires of the bhakti lakta bija. In the heart of every living entity, nitya siddha krishna prema sadyukavanai shravanadi shurachite koruya udaya. In the heart of every living entity is prema. That prema is like a seed form, but it is inside steel box. And when the seed is inside a steel box, it cannot receive any water or any sun rays or any earth or heat or anything. So it never fructifies. But when it comes in contact with the Shuddha Bhakta, with a pure devotee, then that steel becomes melted by his sarusanga, by Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte. By hearing from him, that devotee, that Kalpataru, your steel-framed heart becomes melted. And then that seed, that bhakti lata, bij means seed, that seed can begin to receive the life-giving, nourishing rays of the sun, the sun rays emanating from the pure heart of prema, of the pure devotee. Those rays of sun, they shine on your seed, and the waters of hearing and chanting, they soften that seed, and it begins to sprout and grow. But until you have... So that is our real desire. The Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. The desire of every soul is to love God. That is our eternal desire. Of course, because that seed and that desire is covered in a steel box with 100 padlocks of 100 levers each, it is very difficult to perceive that that is our real desire. We think, oh, profit is our desire, adoration is our desire, distinction is our desire, position, power, fame, money, women, men, houses, buildings, clothing. These are our desires. These are not our desires. These are false desires. They're like thorn bushes wrapped around the steel box. And inside the steel box is your lata bija, your bhakti, your desire for love, love of Krishna. So the pure devotee, he comes and he melts that steel box and he says, awaken, O soul, jeev jago, utishta jagrata, prapyan varon nibhodata. He says, wake up! Come out of that box. Express yourself. Serve Krishna. Hear about Krishna. Chant. Love Krishna. Bhajo Krishna. That one verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Nitai and Haridas to go door to door and say, Bhajo Krishna. Chant Krishna. Remember Krishna. Worship Krishna. There's one Bengali verse. So this is received, all this mercy and instruction and kindness is received from the pure devotee. That's why we say Vancha Kalpataru, because he can fulfill that desire. He can release the seed of devotion from the imprisonment of our heart through lifetimes of maya. So therefore, he actually fulfills our heart, the desire that's in the core of our heart. Because the real one and only desire in the core of everyone's heart is to love God. And the pure devotee brings that out. Otherwise, the seed remains dormant. Just like when they excavated the pyramids in Egypt. Everyone knows the big, you know, those big stone pyramids. They went inside and they found some seeds of wheat berries. And they were 3,000 years old. But they did not germinate. They were just in a seed form. They were 3,000 years lying inside the pyramid. But because of the energizing effect of that geometric structure, they did not degenerate. So then the scientists, they took those seeds that were 3,000 years old, wheat kernels, put them in some water, a little soil, a little heat and sun. And what happened? Roti chapati. Haribo. And dahlia. Well, as you like. So, it means there was life there, but it was dormant. It was covered until the right environment, the right association, the right factors were introduced. So within the heart of everyone is love of God. And the environment must be created. An environment must be introduced. A favorable environment by which that seed can grow and thrive and sprout. Once it sprouts, it's on its way. But it'll never sprout until one gets sarusanga, sarusanga, sarvashastra hoy, lavamacha, sarusanga, sarvasiddhi hoy. Any other questions? Vancha kopa truvyascha kripa sindhu vayeva cha patitanam bhavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha anantakoti vaishnavindaki srila prabhupada ki srimad bhagavatam ki.